A little later, we are going deep into the world of pet fashion.
She is. Blue likes her bling bling. And there's not very much of an inch of that that is not blinged. And she's part of the Royal BB
Club. You do not want to miss this. But first.
Hi there. My name is Isabel Mori. And this is an actual emergency.
Hello?
Hey, Isabel. You called the helpline with a code red.
I did.
What is your factual emergency?
I really need to know if dogs have belly buttons. Because, like, where are they?
Well, in fact, you're not alone with this question.
Really?
It's been raised on dogster.com, pawculture.com, puppyleaks.com, practicalpaw.com. There's a huge amount of appetite for belly button knowledge.
Wow. Wow.
So run me through your arguments for and against.
For belly buttons. They're mammals. Like, I don't understand how they would be in their mother's bellies without belly buttons. Like, they need umbilical cords. Against, have you ever seen a dog belly button? No.
I like your confidence.
You've never seen a dog belly button.
The hard thing is, you're not going to see it because it's usually covered by fur.
So this is veterinarian Justine Lee. They do have belly buttons.
But where?
In the belly region.
But what do they look like?
They look totally different than the way human ones do. Dogs don't have innies or outies. It's literally just a couple centimeter thick white scar.
Oh, weird.
It is weird. And we have asked numerous vets why it's a flat scar and not like a innie or outie like we have.
Yeah.
And there was no consensus. So if any listener out there is a canine medical professional and can give us a definitive answer for why dog navels do not take the shape of a button, please let us know.
I guess we need to do some more research on belly buttons.
If there were no belly button, which is how we began this call, how did you think it worked in the womb?
I can't. I'm just like trying to think back to my biology class, like how do umbilical cords work? I don't even think I can explain that.
This is how umbilical cords work. You've got a fetus in the uterus. The placenta is in there too. It is the organ that sends oxygen and nutrients to the fetus and filters waste. And the umbilical cord is the tube that attaches the fetus to the placenta. It's like a fetus straw. But with dogs, especially big dogs, there can be more than one fetus in the uterus.
A Chihuahua may only have one puppy. A Great Dane may have 10 to 15 puppies.
That's like a lot of babies to have in there.
I know.
Ugh.
Which, by the way, can be fathered by different dogs.
So even in one litter, you could still have puppies from different dads. You see a dog, say it's a German Shepherd, and all the puppies come out, half look like German Shepherds, half look like, you know, little Chihuahuas. It could have actually been bred by a Chihuahua dad.
In addition to each puppy having potentially its own puppy daddy, each puppy also gets its own placenta.
A mother who has, you know, say 10 puppies, she's going to have 10 separate placentas with their own separate umbilical cord.
Which means belly buttons for all.
Oh.
Then the mother dog delivers the puppies and the placenta comes out too.
Sometimes you'll actually notice that the mom is starting to chew it.
It's like a placenta buffet.
No, thank you.
The puppy will come out. You'll still notice that that umbilical cord is attached to the placenta. The mother will typically eat that or it will just rip naturally. And so that's what scars and becomes a belly button.
So next time you dig around for your dog's belly button, that's what you can think about.
A mother Great Dane eating placenta?
Sure.
Oh, you know, there are those mothers that eat placenta now.
I know. Humans. They're just like dogs. So that is the story of dog belly buttons, but I want to leave you with a parting thought. There are mammals without belly buttons, and their birthing ritual is even more extreme.
Oh, what? Wait, which mammals?
Marsupials. Possums, kangaroos.
Of course, kangaroos pouch. Oh, I should have guessed that.
They do not have belly buttons. And have you seen a video of what it looks like inside a kangaroo pouch?
I have not.
Okay, I'm sending it right now.
Oh, it's starting.
Oh.
Oh, no. It's so red.
Oh, that's not what I imagined a baby kangaroo to look like. Oh, what? Oh, it's like clawing.
A tiny fetus-looking kangaroo climbs out of its mother's birth canal, shimmies up her belly, and then it goes to live in a very humid-looking pouch while it continues to develop.
I've always sort of considered kangaroos cute, but this is changing my mind.
If you want kangaroos ruined for you, please head to our Twitter feed at ELT Show or our Facebook page. We'll put the video there. After the break, from belly buttons to belly shirts for dogs, when did we start putting clothes on our pets? The answer, coming up.
Hi, my name is Nick from Colorado, and I'm just kind of curious, when did people start putting clothes on pets? That seems kind of a weird thing.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, Laura.
The deep history of pet clothes. Nick, what intrigues you about this question?
It seems like something that, like, maybe, like, if someone from, like, 100 years ago saw people putting clothes on animals, they would just think that's kind of ridiculous.
Wait, tell me more about what you think a person 100 years ago would think about this.
If I were to put myself in that person's shoes, it's like, wow, like, humans must be doing really, really well if they have time to worry about, like, putting clothes on their pets.
You're in for a real surprise.
Okay.
When you think about pet clothes, when you asked this question, what did you have in mind?
I guess like the corny family photo with like a golden retriever in like a Christmas sweater that looks unhappy.
A dog in a sweater.
Yeah.
All right, let's start looking at some outfits.
Nick, erase that image.
Toby is our rescue. He's a Schnauzer mix. He's wearing his silk ascot. We just took his tuxedo to go blow dry because he marked it.
Nick, pet fashion is way beyond chunky knits, if you know where to look.
Do they have pet fashion shows?
Yes, they do, Nick.
Opening tonight is Pet Personality Summer Strand and her chihuahua, April Moon.
Welcome to the New York Pet Fashion Show, a charitable event where you can see the hottest pet looks. It was in a hotel ballroom in New York, carpeted, which seemed dangerous. And producer Annette Heist and I went together to assess the state of pet fashion today.
This is Gertie, and she is a Beva Yorkshire Terrier, which is bred in Germany.
Gertie was in an evening gown.
It is a light pink taffeta with antique lacing along the bottom, overlaid by a sheer glimmer fabric and studded with over 1,000 Swarovski crystals.
At home, she's more casual.
And she loves digging in the backyard and chasing squirrels, so she's very much the dog at home. This is strictly for formal occasions.
I have so many questions.
Please, hit me.
Okay, so do they do like a runway walk?
They sure do.
We have 4 runway shows tonight. International Carnival and Hat Couture, Country Western Couture, Made in the USA, and then our Best in Show Costume Contest, which we...
That's Greg Oler. He organized the event. And many of the pets had handlers to take them down the runway.
And we've got dogs, cats, we've got a boa constrictor, we've got a rescued rat, we've got a rescued chicken, we've got a bearded lizard.
You got to meet the lizard?
Oh, I met the lizard. She was in a zebra print homecoming dress. It was modeled after her human's homecoming dress.
Really? You matched?
Yeah. I'm debating if I want to wear it tonight or not, but I'm not going to probably wear it because I want everything to be focused on her.
How do they keep all the animals, like, contained?
It was a madhouse.
Were there any, like, incidences, I guess, of, like, animals fighting.
Yeah, there were a few moments where like a couple dogs got into it, and seeing dogs in pants try to tussle is really, really funny.
Did they do the movie thing and like take their shirt off before they started fighting? Let's do this. What were the people wearing? Did they dress to fit the theme of their animal?
We are Old West Saloon, and Geppetto is an Old West bartender, and Gianna is a saloon girl.
That one has a wig on that matches your wig.
Yes. Yes, we're both redheads tonight.
Do people do this, like, professionally? Is it like a hobby?
There were some professional pet clothes designers there.
My brand is Rebarkable Wags.
My name is Anthony Rubio, a.k.a. the Pet Couturier. I do women's wear, canine couture, and men's accessories.
How much do you have to spend to have your dog really pop?
I would say it all depends on where you shop. So if you want to shop at the high-end store, then you're going to spend about $175 on a piece.
That's like a really nice human outfit all put together.
Yeah. Nick, this is the state of affairs for animal fashion today. How did we get here?
Yeah. I was asking, how did we get here, like sweaters on dogs at Christmas? But it seems like we're way past what I thought we were.
To find out when people first put clothes on pets and how we got here, we consulted an expert.
Yeah, I'm afraid if you want to know about the history of dog clothes, that I'm your woman.
Her name is Catherine Greer.
I'm the author of Pets in America, A History.
You are the pet historian.
I kind of am, I think. Yeah.
So she's a pet owner.
Oh, yes. One cat, one dog, one tortoise, and one horse.
Do they all wear clothes?
Actually, I did dress one of my dogs, a little old dog named Stumpy, because he didn't have much of a coat. And so he had a very attractive turtleneck sweater.
And the tortoise has a turtleneck naturally.
Let's start with the first kind of clothing that pets got.
Can you guess the first apparel that animals wore? I'm going to give you a clue.
I call them a circle of culture and society around an animal's neck.
Like scarf?
Collars.
A collar. Okay. Yeah. I'd never looked at it like that.
And collars date back to ancient Egypt.
Well, collars seem a little more utilitarian.
You're not buying that exactly as clothing.
I don't think it's not clothing.
No, I get it. You're interested in clothing as we know clothing.
Yeah, so like a shirt, like pants, something.
Yeah, you get the person from 100 years ago in your mind, like the kind of clothing that they would laugh at.
Yeah.
Brace yourself for this.
So the first example that I found of a coat for dogs was a pattern in a women's magazine in the 1870s in Godey's Lady's Book.
1870s, well over 100 years ago. This is besides apparel for royal dogs, which dates back even further. But for ordinary dogs, this seems to be the first dog coat.
Okay, tell me more.
Around this time, mid-1800s, more Americans are importing dogs from Europe.
And one of the kinds that was popular in the mid-19th century was the Italian Greyhound.
Are you familiar with this dog?
Yes, a spindly dog.
Yeah, very slim, really delicate little creatures. And they have almost no coat.
And I guess they do look kind of cold most times.
They're not designed for winter weather.
So magazines printed crochet patterns, instructing people how to make these dog coats themselves.
What do these look like?
It looked like a horse blanket, really, except it had a fringe across the bottom, and it also had little bells on it.
That sounds very annoying.
Well, I would think so.
So this is a DIY dog coat. The first commercially produced dog jacket comes in 1890, according to Catherine. At this time, cities are growing, and the commercial coat seems tailored to the urban canine 1%. It's also still mainly about keeping dogs warm.
That's still utilitarian. When was it first seen as fashion?
It really is in the 1940s that you start to see the beginnings of what I would call fantasy clothing for animals.
In the 1940s?
40s and 50s, yeah.
Nick, here is when we start to see dog fashion for fashion's sake.
Little dresses or tutus or negligees.
Negligees?
Oh, yeah.
What's a negligee?
Lingerie.
Oh, really? Oh, that's kind of weird. I don't know how I feel about that.
I'm right there with you. College football sweaters for dogs?
That makes more sense, I guess.
Oh, I also thought that was weird and gross. This is not about utilitarian use anymore. I mean, in fact, there are whole companies that specialize in fancy clothes for Hollywood doglets.
I just recently have been learning about a woman named Ann Ardmore, who created a company called Ann Ardmore's Hollywood Dog Togs in the early 1940s.
These names are priceless.
I just looked it up. Tog means clothes. That's interesting.
By the 50s and 60s, pet fashion explodes. People have money to spend, and they are spending it on their pets in all sorts of ways. People are painting their dogs' nails. They are styling their dogs' hair to match their own.
So this is the age, the period where you see a bouffant hairdo and it's sort of a lavender blue and the poodle be dyed the same color.
I mean, when you're describing people dyeing the hair of their pets, painting their nails, does that mean that pet clothes are more tasteful now than they used to be?
No. Because what you're finding now is, fairy outfits with wings and hot dog costumes and all this other crazy stuff. And the way I would describe this stuff is being sort of outside taste.
Outside taste for many, many decades.
Yeah, that's crazy. I thought it was more of just like this recent like corny thing.
It's a longstanding corny thing.
Yeah.
But Nick, the other part of your question was why?
Yeah. Why do people do this?
I will tell you that I've come to the conclusion that it's a form of play for pet owners.
Dressing them up is not for the pets. It's for us.
The part that feels weird is like it feels like the dog doesn't really have a choice.
That's true. And that gets at one of the fundamental asymmetries in pet keeping. You know, we really do call the shots. We love them. We care for them. But in any case, the relationship allows us to do things like paint their toenails when they would never have asked for that.
Yeah, I mean, the term is man's best friend, right? But like, you don't control every aspect of your friend's life in that way.
I think this is also maybe the genius of dogs. Like, they roll with the asymmetry.
Do you dress your dogs up every day?
All the time. All the time. They like it. They look for it.
Do you like to be naked?
Not in public.
Right. So she doesn't like to be naked in public either.
She's actually not a fan of fashion. So I don't know what we're doing here.
Taking it in. Maybe you'll change your mind.
Maybe. She doesn't seem to be trying to take her clothes off right now.
She's going with it.
Yeah. Dogs are. They'll just go along with anything. But like, what about, I mean, cats?
You ever tried to dress a cat? I've put a Santa hat on a cat, but I paid the price.
Cats also have belly buttons, in case you're wondering. Thanks to listeners Nick and Isabel for calling. Please give the ELT helpline a ring with your pressing, factual questions.
It's almost like a very delayed form of Google. Like, I ask you guys the question, and then a while later,
months later,
I get an answer.
You too can join the Slow Google movement. Hashtag Slow Google, 347-464-9626.
Every Little Thing was produced by Flora Lichtman, Annette Heist, Catherine Wells, Phoebe Flanagan, Sakia Gibbons, and Aaron Reese, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Ian Chillug is our consulting editor. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. Some snakes have belly buttons when they're born, but then they get scaled over. Goodbye.